All right, Reg, how you doing, my friend? Confidant? Collaborator? What do you say we do a little podcasting? All right, sounds good to you, sounds good to me. Get that trigger finger ready, I'll give you the three S's, star, smile, strong, and I'll give you the countdown, and you hit that button on the big one number. Ready? Star, smile, strong, 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Of course, don't forget, it's always important to listen every week, but it's also just as important to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. If you like what you hear, don't forget, you can always go to WGNRadio.com, go to the podcast section, and then you can hit the prompt for this specific podcast. And there you will find podcast after podcast after podcast just waiting for you to either experience for the first time or the second time or the 20th time. Lots of podcasts there from the past. Love to have you go back and listen to some of the older ones so you know where we've been, so you know where we're going. And right now we're going to episode 496. Ooh. I don't know about you. I can smell 500 from here. Yeah. Well, that cleared out my sinuses. Anywho, so here we are. It is officially now the holiday. It's the holiday season. It's officially the holiday season, right? We are on a mad dash, as it's right now, this week, to Thanksgiving. And then right after that, whoa, it's that most wonderful time of the year. Yeah. Christmas is upon us. I don't know about you, but I've already put up my Christmas stuff. Yeah. November 10th, it went up. November 10th. Earliest I've ever put it up. Usually I'm putting it up around the middle of the month, but I was like, you know what? I could use a little Christmas right this very minute. And so we put it up a little earlier, but I'm glad we did. And everything is festive. Once again, is I don't know if you know the rules. If you're a newcomer, you don't know the rules. While I usually put up my Christmas decorations up early before Thanksgiving, on the outside of the house, nothing in terms of Christmas stuff. Still have an autumnal wreath. Still have a couple of fake little pumpkins on the by the front stoop. So to the outside world, we are still celebrating the autumn and the upcoming turkey holiday of Thanksgiving. However, inside, it's a Santa Claus in Winter Wonderland. So we've got two personalities in the house. On the outside, to the outside world, I don't want to be accused of it's too early, too early, it's too early. Okay, if it's too early for you, I'm not going to throw it down your throat. You come by my house, you see it from the outside, you say, okay, a couple of little pumpkins, nice autumnal wreath. Okay, that person gets it. But if you ever come inside right now, if you've come in over the last couple of weeks, the holiday music is playing and the rooms are decked to the halls are decked, if you will. Oh yeah, we haven't decorated the tree yet. It's up. It's lit. Thankfully there wasn't any major lighting problems. Every year it's always a fingers crossed. No problems this year. Put everything up where it goes. Everything looking good. Very pleased with the way the all the decorations look this year. Pretty much what I do after every year, for the most part, I put everything in the same place. And that's because I take pictures every year of the all the decorations so that I have a guide to go by. Because I really like, we've come to a point now, we've lived in this house enough and we've got so much Christmas stuff that we don't really buy much anymore. So now it's just, this is the way it looks. You know, tradition is such a big part of Christmas. And so I think it's traditional to always put your Christmas decorations up the same way as well. So I take a photo of everything and then I have those photos. And when the, you know, for a year, they're sitting in the computer. And then I decide to pull them out. And we just go room for room and put everything. Now, every so often, I might change things up. I mean, I don't want to be accused of being inflexible. Oh, you know, sometimes I might put a piece of tinsel in a different spot. But for the most part, everything is pretty much in the same place because it really feels and looks good where it is. Have these dowels that, for instance, go up the all the different kind of dowels that go up the stairs. And I don't change the order of them. They're in the same order they are every year. I don't know whenever I did them. I moved them around the first couple of years, but now they are set in stone. So, yeah, that's what I do. And sometimes, you know, my wife looks at me and rolls her eyes. Oh, you again with the pictures, again with the pictures. But then all of a sudden I go, hey, wait a minute. Where's this? We forgot about this. And then I go down and find, oh, I would have forgotten that. You can't assume that you remember where everything is all the time and where it should go. And that's why the pictures are important. A little OCD, a little anal, perhaps. But you know what? Everything looks really good. Holiday music playing all the time in the house and different rooms. So we're full-fledged at this point. Sadly, as I've said many times on this podcast, I've always enjoyed Thanksgiving growing up because it was my mom's holiday with the family. And everybody came to our house. So Thanksgiving always still has a special place in my heart. But, you know, my mom's been gone almost 19 years this year, and we haven't really gotten together with the family to do that anymore. Everybody's got their own little Thanksgivings, and so, you know, it's very different. So I still have a soft spot for Thanksgiving, but sadly, it just seems like, you know, already there are Christmas commercials, and there have been for a couple, 3 weeks already, and as I've said many times, Thanksgiving has become a speed bump holiday. It's a speed bump on the way to Christmas. you feel it. You stop for it. You halt. You go over it slowly, but you drive right. But then you keep driving right toward Christmas. That's why I call it a speed bump holiday. But no, I still enjoy Thanksgiving. But as I said, it's. Our house has got a couple of things going at the same time here in terms of this holiday season every year. And then, of course, after the first week of January or so, then I take down all the Christmas stuffs. However, my wife, I'm into Santas and my wife's into snowmen, and so we keep up all the snowmen things for winter. So we pretty much will have the holiday, you know, winter decorations up. Certainly you take down the tree and everything, but in terms of snowmen, you know, stuffed animals and other kind of snowmen-related things and snow-related things, we will keep those up until the end of February because March is the beginning of meteorological spring. So I take everything down. So when March 1st comes, then we're back to spring. That's meteorological spring on March 1st. So like the last couple, 3 days of February is when all the winter stuff comes down, regardless of the weather, even if it snows, doesn't matter. But yeah, so this stuff will be up from November, you know, pretty much all November, December, January, and February, almost 4 months. As I had said, also, one of the biggest things for me at Christmas time, just because I'm a big music fan, is the Christmas music, of course. And now, I mean, what a difference Christmas music has taken in the last several years, especially between now with streaming services. You can basically, you know, on YouTube and streaming services, I mean, you could literally find any Christmas song that's ever been made. That used to, once again, it's been very tough for me the last, 20 years, because so many, technology has really cramped my style in many ways. It is really, it's attacked and overcome the media business, of which I've been a part of since I was, in my early 20s, still in college, and I was already writing for a newspaper. So I've been involved with the media for, several decades. And, that's been completely decimated, both print and radio, especially both of them now with, with everything online and, blogs and then now podcasts and everything. So sadly, radio and print, which are my two major areas of expertise, those have been completely diluted. And it's very disappointing to see how now anybody could just, turn on a computer and write something and it goes out to the world, whether it's good or bad, it doesn't matter. There's no filter. But it's accepted now as okay. So our standards have certainly gone down because there's no filter anymore. And podcasts, my goodness, now, I mean, literally everybody's got one. I think there's probably maybe, 300 and some million people in this country, and there's probably 300 and million some podcasts. But not only that, the music collecting, from my standpoint, has, sort of been tremendously affected, too. I used to pride myself not only on my record collection, which now I don't even, used to have it displayed, in the CD days. I mean, it was tough with the albums because, they're just kind of in a stack, you put them in a crate or something back in the old days, or you put them on a shelf and everything. And I've got my vinyl, but, I'm not a big vinyl. Over the vinyl thing a million times already. I still buy some vinyl, don't get me wrong, but it's more from a collection standpoint. It's not for playing it. So I had a tremendous, initially vinyl collection. Then I had a tremendous CD collection for more than, 30 years at least, until, Napster came along and destroyed that. But from the, at least 20 years, from the mid-80s to the mid-2000s, and used to have it, proudly displayed, and I was very proud of my, not only my entire CD collection, but I was very proud of my, the diversity and the interesting albums that I would have in my Christmas music collection. I didn't even put my Christmas stuff in with my other CDs. I had a special holder that I had for them that I would bring out at Christmas time. So they were all individual. All my Christmas stuff was all in a special holder. It wasn't part of the bigger collection because it was an annual thing. And I was very proud of my CD collection. And I still have it, and I still bring it out. And I will still play those CDs, even though I could play every one of them, off of my phone and things like that. But I still cling to the CD. And I had some great ones, and I have some great ones. And they're old and new. There's a great mix, diverse list of artists and diverse lists of compilations with different kind of songs, all kinds of music, rock oriented, traditional, instrumental, Jackie Gleason's Christmas albums, and some of the classics like Johnny Mathis's Christmas album, or Burl Ives and people like that. Of course, the Phil Spector, which is maybe one of my favorite albums of all time, period. As well as the rock and roll kind of compilations and songs by everybody from Bruce Springsteen and Elton and Paul McCartney and Tom Petty and, you know, Madonna and Eurythmics and, you know, everybody's got Christmas songs out. And so I still play my Christmas CDs. I still have an affinity for them and a connection to them. But, you know, I could easily play every one of them. And I've made a huge playlist of like 200 Christmas songs on my phone. And when I, you know, we have, you know, people over or something, I'll, of course, just, you know, hit that and plug it into the stereo and off it goes. But I still, if I'm home alone or if I'm home, I'll put the CDs in. And I've talked about some of my favorite Christmas CDs and things like that. But that whole thing has changed. I don't buy any new ones anymore. There's really no sense to buy any more new ones because, as I said, why spend the money when you're, you know, on a CD when you've got access to these streaming things? And I miss that because I really did enjoy buying those and finding those. You know, any kind of record collector will tell you there's nothing better than finding some hard to find album or CD, something you've always heard about or something you thought you could never find and or you thought was out of print, or you remember when you were a little kid and then you're trying to find it and sure enough you find it. Oh my God. It's like being an archaeologist finding some kind of a dinosaur bone or some mummy in Egypt, you know? And so that I do miss quite a bit. But as I said, I'm happy with the ones I have. And yes, I have gone online and, you know, cherry-picked, you know, songs on different streaming services and created, you know, Christmas. My Christmas playlist is called the Xmas, X-M-A-S, Xmas Ecstasy with an X. Not the EC. So it's Xmas Ecstasy. Ecstasy spelled with an X. And yeah, so I think there's like 200 songs on there. And it's got everybody on there. But so then between the streaming services and now the satellite radio, which play, you know, Sirius Satellite Radio has like three or four, if more, if not more, on their app. They have all told probably about 10 to 15 channels. But on the regular service, they've got at least three or four that I listen to, the Holiday Traditions and the Holly and the Hallmark Radio. And I think I listened to the Jimmy Fallon one as well. So I've got all those programmed now. In my car and on my unit in the house. And so, yeah, you know, I don't really buy CDs anymore, the Christmas CDs anymore, but that used to be such an annual thing, and now that's gone. But the Christmas music, at least great access to it. I can't complain about that. Whatever I may have thought in my head, I just go online and type it in, and sure enough, it pops up. So there's certainly a lot of instant gratification, but as I said, there's something a little missing, the actual experience of hunting something down or finding it and then unwrapping it. No, you know, that's what collecting is all about. If you're not a collector, I'm sure you're looking at scratching your head going, what are you talking about? Just go online and look it up and hit it and hit play. What are you talking about? But if you're a collector, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But when I and now, of course, over the last 10 or 15, if not 20 years, even on terrestrial radio, you know, here in Chicago, we've got one station that has been playing Christmas music. If you think that I put up my Christmas decorations too early, what about them? They started playing, going 24-hour Christmas music on, I believe, November 4th. They've almost been playing it for a month. So you might think that I've you know, started a little too early. Too early, Jim. Too early, too early. Well, then talk to that radio station. But what's interesting is that, you know, before the popularity of streaming services, before the popularity of satellite radio, where there's this always, you know, 24-hour access, commercial free, you know, between the satellite and the, you know, the streaming service where you can just pull up a song at any minute. One of the great gimmicks and one of the great radio stunt formattings was the switch over to Christmas music. Now, this used to be a huge deal. I noticed this year it wasn't as big. Oh, they tried, you know, the station itself certainly tried to make a big deal about it, but I didn't get the same kind of buzz before, like leading up to it, that you used to, because that really was, for many people, one of the main places to listen to Christmas music all the time, was on that station when they went 24 hours on the FM dial here in Chicago. Everybody knew what, you know, that station, and everybody knows it, and they know that they, you know, play it. But now people have so, once again, everything gets so cannibalized. So now people have so many different, you know, options, and not only the options, but, you know, on demand. I don't have to wait and see what song they're going to play. I could play whatever song I want, whenever I want to play it, as many times as I want to play it. You know, between, you know, on a streaming service, or, you know, on a satellite, you know, you put on a station, just let it play in the background with no commercials, as opposed to the terrestrial station, which I know they try to limit the commercials, but at the same time, that's their biggest moneymaker. There was a time when that radio station, when they flipped, and that's why they always kept, you know, before they used to flip, maybe, you know, they used to do it like, you know, right after Thanksgiving. That made sense, right? That was before. But now, you know, when they saw the ratings that they would get, their ratings typically, especially in December, would sometimes not only quadruple, but they would be sometimes five times their normal ratings for that station. I mean, they pretty much made all their revenue in 2 months. When you're right, when your ratings are four or five times your normal rating, you can charge much more money for your ad rates during those times. And so that's where they realized, hey, you know, people are starting to get into the holiday spirit much earlier than they used to. So they rode that wave. And now, like I said, it's literally 3 or 4 days after Halloween. Boom. Christmas music. That's why I said, you know, Thanksgiving is a speed bump holiday now. Those radio stations go, hey, get in the holiday spirit November 4th. Thanksgiving, Schmanksgiving. We're Christmasing. And so, and now I've noticed over the last 3 or 4 years with the popularity now where everybody's got some kind of a streaming subscription to something, or a lot of people have, you know, the satellite in their car and things like that. I've noticed that while still their ratings are still very high, they're not as dramatically high. They're not five times anymore. They may be three, almost four times, which is still very good. Don't get me wrong. It's nothing to sneeze at, especially with a winter cold. But it's not as dominant because, once again, there's more access and it's more what I want. I don't have to wait for the radio station to play my favorite Christmas song. But as I said, so I've been playing a variety of different Christmas songs, Christmas stations, including that one as well, the instrument, you know, the terrestrial one, depending on where I'm at and what kind of radio I might have in the garage or something like that, where it's not hooked up to a satellite or any kind of streaming service. I've got music playing in my garage. When I pull into my garage, there's Christmas music in there. I've got a radio in there, and it is on that terrestrial station that plays the Christmas music. So when I pull in and I walk out, Christmas music in the garage at all times. Yeah, I'm a sucker for the holidays, no question about that. But one thing I really have noticed, especially when I'm keeping the satellite radio Christmas music on in one of the rooms all the time, just in the background, is it's amazing how, especially depending on, now if you listen to, you know, some stations, they just play more of the contemporary songs, you know, the Christmas songs, because now everybody's at Christmas song, you know, Kelly Clarkson and, you know, obviously Mariah Carey's made a whole new second career, as big as a star and as many record-breaking hits as Mariah Carey has had over the last 35 years or so. It's that Christmas song that that's paying her bills and keeping her in the lap of luxury. There's no question about that. And she has like a Christmas show every year now. It's amazing. It used to be a time where in the pop music world, in the rock world, I should say, that Christmas albums were kind of looked at as like a sellout or beneath, you know, especially the rockers of the 70s. They took themselves and their music very seriously. And so did their audience. And you always would hear the term sellout. Now, like as I said many times, if you hear anybody use the term sellout, you know they're aging themselves and they're dating themselves. Because in today's world, there's no such thing as selling out. Pop artists want to sell as much as they can. They want to be as popular as they can. Everybody has their own brand. They want commercial endorsements. They want sponsorships from corporations. The rock people used to, you know, what they had that kind of hippie mentality for several decades, and they were very gun shy of that. It wasn't until the 90s when a new group of younger people came up that were raised on MTV right from the cradle, and they were like, what are you talking about, sellout? I want to do a commercial for Pepsi. I want to do a commercial for McDonald's. I want to do a commercial for Coke. I want to do a commercial for Chevy. You know, a lot of rock stars, as I've talked about this before, you know, Neil Young in the 80s wrote a song like This Note's for You. It was a stinging diatribe against, you know, commercial, you know, rock music being used in commercials. And a lot of rock stars wouldn't let their music be used in commercials. And it was all this big thing because it was that Woodstock hippie generation, you know, it's for the music, man. And they were, even though they were selling you T-shirts and everything else, for some reason, they were as corporate as can be. You know, I've said many times, the Rolling Stone created, you know, Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones created that logo with the lips. That's done as a branding thing. That's corporate, okay? So you can complain all you want. And the Stones have always been, you know, they sold Start Me Up to Microsoft early on. They took some heat, but then no one cared because, as I said, a new generation said, hey, what are you talking about? I want to make money. I want awareness. I want to be on a commercial. I want my brand to be out there. And so all those old sellout rules and all those little hippie ideologies in terms of music, that's so yesterday, it's not even funny. But as I said, you know, there was a time when in the 70s artists kind of, you know, they didn't, you know, Christmas albums were viewed as a sellout. They were viewed as something that old artists did or washed up artists did. They can't do anything else, so they go into a studio and they record some old songs with some new arrangements, and they put an album out and they get a little publicity, but they looked at it, you know, that was looked down and frowned upon by, once again, you know, the 60s and 70s kinds of artists, the hipster cool people, you know, especially in the 70s. And then, as I said, you know, in the 80s, thanks to MTV, when music got more commercialized and it was visual medium now, and it became more advertising connected MTV. I want my MTV. Suddenly, those rules slowly, it took a while, but by the 90s, some of the established rockers realized, what am I fighting against? All these other people are making millions of dollars and I'm not. I've got my integrity, but they've got a yacht. As I said, then you had a new generation that was growing up, that grew up on MTV, that saw nothing wrong with taking corporate sponsorships or taking corporate money or being in commercials or putting their songs in commercials or starring in commercials. Or they had no problem with that. And so now that's where we are today. There's no stigma whatsoever. There used to be a stigma, but there isn't. And so what's interesting, when I've been listening now to the various radio stations, especially on satellite radio, because, as I said, I sort of have three or four different stations, so there's different genres of music. But what I continue to hear, for the most part, because, they like to play don't forget me wrong, there's a lot of newer, Christmas songs that, by newer artists, and certainly a certain, audience will listen to those. But as I've said many times, Christmas especially is about tradition. And so while, yes, it's great, like I said, the Mariah Carey song is 30 years old already. For some people, that is an old-time song. But I'm talking about the real ones, the old, old ones, the Bing Crosby White Christmases or the Gene Autry Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeers or Santa Claus is Coming to Town or the Brenda Lee Rocking Around the Christmas Tree or the, as I said, the Phil Spector Christmas Gift for You with, the Ronettes and Darlene Love and things like that. Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra, some of these people. And, those are still always played, and there's just something that those songs with those arrangements and the orchestra and the night and the different little, sometimes it's like the percussion things and the wind chimes and the xylophones and all those little tinkling kind of, production, those little tinkling little instruments that they throw in there in some of those lush productions. It really makes the season bright, right? the Johnny Mathis, there's the classic Johnny Mathis, album, and it's the one I think it was with Ray Conniff, or maybe was it? I'm pretty sure it was Ray Conniff and his orchestra. It's a classic one. If you ever see the cover of it, it's like a very young Johnny Mathis on the cover, and he's wearing like a ski outfit, that's the classic one from the 60s. But there's just something about those songs and the sound of them that is tradition, and it helps set the tone. The new ones are catchy and fun. Don't get me wrong. I know John Legend has a lot. I said Kelly Clarkson, and everybody's got one now. There's no stigma anymore. Now people are making Christmas albums all the time. And to me, that's a really good idea. Because as passé or as uncool as Christmas albums or hacky or whatever people wanted to call them, the fact of the matter is, in the long run, and now I've been around long enough to see generational shifts in taste and in music, there was a time when I was growing up, that the music that I listened to was the music of the day. Well, it's not anymore. And there's acts and bands and singers that are second nature to me, that many young people have no idea what I'm talking about. And so I've been around long enough to sort of observe, some trends and some things. And one thing that I've noticed, especially over the last couple of years, because of the fact that once again, radio, like traditional radio, terrestrial radio, the formats are so tight now, and they're not varied very much. There's mostly contemporary new music. There's some still rock, old rock stations, but for the most part, it's all what's, you know, music of the last, you know, 15 or 20 years. I mean, don't forget, that's considered old music, 20 years ago. So rock music is considered like, wow, what the heck is that? That's been around forever. And so what I've noticed was that, if it wasn't for some of those older artists who made those Christmas albums, as big as artists as they were. I mean, some of these artists, whether it was Gene Autry. Gene Autry was a singing cowboy. This guy had more money than God in his heyday. He owned baseball teams, and they made their money. He made this money. He was the singing cowboy, and he must have invested it very well. But he was just filthy rich. Or Johnny Mathis, as I said before, Burl Ives, or Perry Como. I might be saying some names, or you don't even know who I'm talking about. Although you might know, because you know what? They're Christmas songs. You may not know what their big hits were that made them popular enough to record Christmas songs, because, of course, the people who initially made Christmas albums were the ones that had found success on their own with big hit songs. And then they said, okay, well, if you want to hear me sing this song or that song, you might want to hear me sing Christmas songs too. But the irony is, while those could have been looked at as kind of hacky or throwaways or kind of schmaltzy or not really high on the artistic meter, they certainly are high on the popularity meter. And at the end of the day, if you're an entertainer, I mean, certainly, you want to be known for your art and your music and your artistic credibility. I get all that. But you also want to be remembered. You want people to know who you were, especially after you've passed away. You want to leave a legacy. And what I find very interesting is I'm listening to these Christmas stations on a regular basis. You start to hear a wide variety of songs, but one thing that has really struck me is so many names from the past are only alive today, even though during their era, they were the Taylor Swifts, they were the Sabrina Carpenters, they were the John Legends, they were the biggest acts and performers and artists musically of their time. They sold millions of records, and they were on every TV show and on the radio and on television and you name it. They were the biggest stars in the world from the 40s and 50s and 60s and even 70s. But now that music is 80 years old or 70 years old or 60 years old or even 50 years old. Just from the 70s, music is 50 years old now. And so as big as those acts were, forget their Christmas music. They were huge. They had their albums and their hit singles and everything. They were huge. But 80, 70, 60, 50 years later, where can you hear that music? Tell me a song by the Andrews Sisters. Tell me a song by Perry Como. Can you? Tell me a song, aside from Somewhere Over the Rainbow, how often do you hear a Judy Garland song on the radio? Where would you hear it? Where do you ever hear a Jimmy Durante song? Huh? Aside from Christmas, where do you ever hear Vince Guaraldi Trio? Where do you ever hear Andy Williams? These people, where do you ever hear Bing Crosby song or a Dean Martin song? These people were huge. Frank Sinatra, how often do you hear? I mean, I know on satellite there's a Frank Sinatra station, but my point is, on a regular terrestrial radio station, where do you hear that music? You don't. It's music from a bygone time. However, at Christmas time, the same station that would never play a song that was by an older artist, like the one that here in Chicago that plays the Christmas music all the time, they would never play a regular, they would never play My Way by Frank Sinatra. They would never play Everybody Loves Somebody by Dean Martin. They would never play, the Bells of St. Mary's or, something by Bing Crosby. They would never play something by, Chances Are by Johnny Mathis. They would never play Mona Lisa by Nat King Cole. They would never play that in their regular rotation. No way. But for a good 2 months every year, every one of those names that I just mentioned get played on that station ad nauseum all the time. Sometimes the same artist more than once an hour. For the other 12 months of the year, they would never be played on a terrestrial station that plays contemporary music. No way. It would completely turn off their young audience. They'd say, "Who? Frank who? Tony Bennett who? Nat King what? Guy who? Bobby who? Bobby Vinton who? Jimmy Durante who? Jose Feliciano, who's he? Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet, who are they? Who are the Andrews sisters? Who's Burl Ives? Oh, that's right. He's the snowman from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. That's all he's known for by most people. Sadly, he was a great actor and a folk singer. Who's Johnny Mathis? Who's Perry Como? These people were the biggest stars of their time. And yet, you never hear their music, except at Christmas time. Then you will regularly hear Frank Sinatra singing Santa Claus is Coming to Town, or Jingle Bells, or The Christmas Waltz, or Mistletoe and Holly, or you hear Dean Martin singing Rudolph the Red-Beaked Reindeer, You'll Go Down in History, or Let It Snow by him. You hear Burl Ives sing Holly Jolly Christmas. You hear Gene Autry sing Rudolph, or hear Santa Claus is Coming, or Here Comes Santa Claus. You'll hear Johnny Mathis sing Sleigh Ride or Winter Wonderland. You'll hear Darlene Love sing Christmas, Baby Please Come Home. You hear the Ronettes, you hear Brenda Lee singing Rocking Around the Christmas Tree. You hear Ray Charles singing Christmas Time is Here, or once again, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, or Winter Wonderland, or one of the great things from one of his great Christmas albums, which is one of my favorites. Or you hear Jose Feliciano sing his great Christmas classic, Feliz Navidad. You won't hear him singing any of his hits. When do you ever hear Jose Feliciano sing Light My Fire? It's one of his biggest hits. He did a cover version of Light My Fire in the late 60s. Where do you ever hear that? Where do you ever hear Jimmy Durante? You hear Jimmy Durante singing Frosty the Snowman, but you don't hear him singing Ink-a-dink-a-dink-a-dink-a-doo. So that's what's so ironic. You can hear Judy Garland singing Over the Rainbow quite a bit, but at Christmas time you hear her, you maybe hear it once, if you go see the movie or something like that, but you'll hear her sing have yourself a merry little Christmas many, many times, because she's saying that in the film. Meet me in St. Louis. So what's so ironic is these throwaway albums, these kind of novelty albums, these gimmicky albums, you could almost make an argument at the time, you know that the artist's agents and managers are like, hey, Frank, hey, Blue Eyes. Okay, you know, you got your My Ways. You got your, you know, One for My Babies. You got your Lady is a Tramp. You know, you've got all those, but you got to make a Christmas album. Yeah, Nat King Cole, you know, you've got L-O-V-E. You've got Mona Lisa. You've got Route 66. But, you know, you really should sing Mel Torme's The Christmas Song with the chestnuts roasting on an open fire. That one might have legs. Yeah, Der Bingle. Yeah, oh, you know, you were a big star. You were one of the first radio stars, one of the biggest stars in the world, movies, television. But you know what? That White Christmas song you wrote, that you sang, you didn't write it, Irving Berlin, obviously, but that White Christmas song is probably going to be the one that most people know you for. I know you had all these other hits, and you made all these movies, and you did all that stuff, but you know what? 100 years from now, 100 years after you were born, 50 years after you've been dead, they're going to remember you for White Christmas. Or in Der Bingle's case, one of my favorite Christmas songs is the song that he did in the late 70s, the Christmas song he did with David Bowie, which you hear quite a bit too. Hey, hats off to Der Bingle for having, even though David Bowie was certainly not Bing Crosby's cup of tea in terms of music, but Bing realized that David Bowie was a very popular singer, and he recognized his talent, and they recorded, you know, Little Drummer Boy and Peace on Earth together, and that's one of the best Christmas songs ever. So this is the irony, is that what would may have been viewed off as kind of, you know, I'll just make a Christmas album to, you know, just put something out and sell a few, and you know, it's not artistic. It's not, I mean, you know, it's not going to be some big thing. I'll just put it out and we'll make some quick, Christmas cash. That's probably the way they viewed it back then. But today, those are the songs that have endured and have endeared. Yes, I mean, come on. I mean, someone like Frank Sinatra, you can't deny. I mean, you know, his body of music. Same thing like Elvis Presley. But you know what? Elvis had a Christmas album, and you hear him sing "Blue Christmas," and you hear him say, "Here comes Santa, here comes Santa, right?" It's Christmas. It ain't Christmas without that. So those were kind of probably viewed as kind of make some quick cash. They used to record them in the summer so they could put them together and, you know, mix them and get them all done. So they didn't make them at Christmas time. They usually made them in the summer. Those albums were all recorded in the summer so they could be released around Christmas time in November. But they were probably looked at as kind of like, just throwaways, and I'll do a Christmas album, but, you know, but make sure that, you know, Sammy Kahn and Jimmy Van Heusen are, you know, are writing their songs for me, you know, when I'm going to put out my real albums. And meanwhile, the real albums, the real songs are known, are remembered, but they're not played as much, and they're not as beloved as much as the versions of traditional Christmas songs that most of those big artists did. So like I said, you know, when you think about some of those albums and some of those songs, sometimes that's the only way that you can reference those people anymore. If I say Jose Feliciano to somebody, I might get, you know, a person in their 30s or 20s or even 40s, who knows. If I say Jose Feliciano, I might get a blank stare, especially someone in their 20s or 30s. I'll probably get a totally blank stare from them. But if I say, well, you know, Feliz Navidad. Oh, sure, Feliz Navidad. If I say Burl Ives, I'll get the blank stare. But then I'll say, oh, you know, Sam the Snowman from Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you know, Silver and Gold, Holly Jolly Christmas. Oh, sure. You know, Nat King Cole. Nat King what? Well, you know, chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Oh, yeah, of course. And that's what's so ironic, I think, that the throwaways. Now, the rock world, as I said before, they initially got into it. Phil Spector in the 60s was so far ahead of his time. And he knew what he was doing. You know, he was known for, I mean, you know, he had some problems. He went to jail. He was kind of a mad genius, sadly. He was an insane, he was a little nuts, but he sure was a talented music producer. And so when he put out his Christmas Gift for You album, it was a revelation. Because what did he do? He took a rock sound and he put it into traditional songs. It was so smart. It was sitting there waiting for someone to do. And his sound was so unique that you knew it was Phil Spector and his group of people. So you knew when you heard White Christmas, you heard it was, you know, it was Darlene Love. And you, when you heard their version of Frosty the Snowman, you knew it was a Phil Spector production with the wall of sound and the pounding, you know, drums and the many guitars and the many, you know, as I said before, you know, the different, you know, several pianos playing at the same time and xylophones and every noise maker you could think of. That's why it was called the Wall of Sound. So you knew that that was the Ronettes singing Frosty the Snowman, or the Crystal singing, you know, Santa Claus is Coming to Town, or the Ronettes doing Sleigh Ride and I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, and you know, Darlene Love. I mean, those all those songs, White Christmas, Frosty the Snowman, The Bells of St. Mary, Santa Claus Coming to Town, Sleigh Ride, Marshmallow World, I Saw Mommy Kissing Santa Claus, Rudolph, Winter Wonderland, Parade of the Wooden Soldiers, Christmas Baby Please Come Home, which was an original that he co-wrote with Ellie Greenwich and Jeff Berry, and Here Comes Santa Claus, I said to you before, the Gene Autry song. You knew that that was the Phil Spector sound with those cool girl groups. And he took that, the once kind of schlocky, schmaltzy, uncool, unhip sound that most people, most cool hipsters and beatniks of the 60s thought that music from the 40s and the 50s and the 30s was all old and horrible. But what Phil Spector was brought whole new life to it by putting those to a rock beat with his Wall of Sound. And it was revolutionary. And those songs today still sound amazing. It's still my favorite, hands down, favorite Christmas album. More than Frank Sinatra, more than Bing Crosby, more than anything else. I'm a rocker at heart. And the Phil Spector A Gift for You album is number one. But as I said, as time went on and rock and roll started to take itself very seriously, by, you know, especially with the advent of Dylan by the mid-60s and then the Beatles in mid to late 60s, rock started to take itself a little too seriously. Then in the 70s you had the hard rock, and then everybody was taking themselves very seriously. And so the whole idea of a rock and roll Christmas album would have, you know, was viewed as passé, was you're a sellout, you're a hack, Why don't you go sing with Frank Sinatra and Liberace while you're at it? You know, you're appealing to, you're a square. You know what I mean? And I think really, and it's not surprising, I think that the person who made rock and roll, not pop necessarily, because Elton John's got a very cool Christmas song from 1973 called Step Into Christmas, which is one of my favorite. But if you listen to Elton's Step Into Christmas song, which was first released in 1973, if you listen to the song and especially the musical production, it's completely influenced by Phil Spector's Gift for You album, which came out like 10 years before it. The Phil Spector, Phil Spector's influence is just, you can't even calculate it. But that was 10 years later. And yet, when Elton put out his Christmas song, he based it on that big, booming wall of sound kind of production. And then I think from a rock music and rock radio perspective, the person who really kind of made it cool to have a Christmas song, if you were a rock band, was Bruce Springsteen. Now, yes, I know you say, okay, well, you just pick the two people that you like the best. But I'm serious here. Bruce Springsteen's version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town is now a classic, right? Well, the fact of the matter is that that never appeared on any album or anywhere until the 80s. It was on a couple of compilation albums later on into the 80s, and then Bruce himself, I think, put it as a B-side to his single My Hometown, probably in 84 or 85. But it was never commercially available. It was originally recorded live, as you can hear, during a Springsteen concert in 1974. Now, that's pretty ironic when you think about the fact that, that he wasn't even that well known, you know, at that time. I mean, he had a couple of albums out, but I think it was recorded, I'm sorry, in 75. So he had just put out, he had Born to Run, so he was very well known. But, you know, it was recorded live at a college, at a concert in New York, and it was kind of given to radio stations to play as promotion around the holidays. It wasn't really meant to be a song that, was put out and released as a single. As I said, it never was. He had a really aggressive manager at the time named Mike Appel, and they recorded that song, and he released it to radio stations on the East Coast, because that's where Springsteen was very popular, and it started to get played around the holidays on rock and roll stations. And that version too, Springsteen's version, is very much influenced by the rock and soul version of the Santa Claus is Coming to Town by Phil Spector once again. But when somebody of Springsteen's level, and he was well respected, especially in 75 and beyond by his peers, when someone like Bruce Springsteen starts to put out a rock and roll version of a Christmas song, a well-known one, well, suddenly there's some validity to all this. And especially when they're seeing it getting played quite a bit around the holidays. So I would say then the next biggest one after Springsteen was probably a year or so later when the Eagles did a version of Please Come Home for Christmas. Now, once again, this was a soul song that was written by Charles Brown. It was never a big, huge hit, necessarily. It got played, but you know, you had to sort of know the song. But it was written, and but it peaked at like it never was a huge hit. It was in 1961. It came and went. But the Eagles pulled it out in the mid-70s, in like 78, and it's become a classic. And ever since, and that thing became a huge hit. It was the first Christmas song, to reach the top 20 in like, 15 years or so. Because once again, this Christmas music wasn't viewed as cool. But between Springsteen's Santa Claus is Coming to Town in 75, which gave it some credibility, and then the Eagles plucking this somewhat obscure Christmas song, which nobody, when the Eagles put that out in 1978, I had no idea that it wasn't their song. I thought they wrote it. It was years later I found out, it was done by Charles Brown. Okay, well, I didn't know that. So those two songs and those two acts, Springsteen and the Eagles, don't forget, by 1978, the Eagles were the biggest band in the world. In 1975, Springsteen had just put out Born to Run, arguably his best album. It was just on the cover of Time and Newsweek. So when other rockers started to see that, then all of a sudden, the idea of rock and roll, serious rock and rollers putting out Christmas songs wasn't that crazy. And then suddenly everybody was doing it. So then all of a sudden there was Greg Lake from Emerson, Lake and Palmer, and the Kinks have a song called Father Christmas. And the Queen has Thank God It's Christmas. And everybody's got Christmas songs now. Some people you would never have expected to have Christmas songs, rock and rollers. George Thorogood and the Destroyers have a great one called Rock and Roll Christmas. Who would have expected that? But rockers realized, wait a minute. Hey man, we could make these songs cool. They don't have to be schmaltzy. We can put a rock and roll beat to these. And so that's the irony, is that many of these bands and these acts from the past, as great as they are, as big as they were during their era, and many of those have continued on for four, five, six decades, and they've had number one songs and you name it, but for 2 months a year, at the same time of the year, you're going to hear Please Come Home for Christmas. You know you're going to hear Santa Claus is Coming to Town. You know you're going to hear Dean Martin and Bing Crosby and Nat King Cole and Frank Sinatra and Tony Bennett and Perry Como and Burl Ives and Gene Autry and Johnny Mathis and Jose Feliciano and Jimmy Durante and Andy Williams and Stephen Eady and the Andrews Sisters and Darlene Love and the Ronettes and Ray Charles and Brenda Lee and so many others. You know you're going to hear them. You probably will not have heard them at all the previous 10 months. All their big hits all these legendary artists known, you know, I mean, Ray Charles for Georgia on My Mind and Hit the Road, Jack. But you, where, how often do you hear it on the radio? But I guarantee you, you're going to hear his Winter Wonderland or his Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. I know you're going to hear Nat King Cole sing. It might be great to hear him do Mona Lisa, but you know you're going to hear him sing the Christmas song. Andy Williams sang Moon River, one of the biggest hits of all time, but I know you're going to hear him sing It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year for sure. And so as much as those artists were known and huge, they have their Christmas music, their throwaway music perhaps, being most responsible to keep their names out there, to keep their recognition out there, and to have their music still played for all their big hits that certainly deserve to be played on the radio more often. But in today's world, they just don't, there's no place for them anymore, except at the holidays. And so, for at least once a year, maybe, when you have the Christmas stations on, whichever you do, or your playlist from your streaming thing, or your satellite radios, or your terrestrial Christmas stations, whatever, if you hear Johnny Mathis and you like what you hear him singing Sleigh Ride or Winter Wonderland, then maybe, I hope, you'll be interested to say, wow, that I like that guy's voice. What else did he do? And maybe you'll look up Johnny Mathis and you'll find his Chances Are hit. Maybe you'll look up Jose Feliciano's version of Light My Fire after you hear Feliz Navidad. Maybe you'll look up Tony Bennett after you hear him sing Snowfall. Maybe you'll go back and see some Frank Sinatra stuff after you hear the Christmas Waltz or Mistletoe and Holly. Maybe you'll hear the Christmas song and you'll hear the beautiful, smooth, melodic voice of Nat King Cole and you'll say, boy, what else did this guy do? These Christmas songs were just a small part of their huge fame and their huge legacy. We hear them every year. We know them and we love them, and they become a part of the holiday season. Enjoy those older artists and those songs that they have made that have become parts of our holidays. But I would also ask you to get your curiosity up. And if you like the way they do a certain Christmas song, in today's world, all you got to do is hit a few buttons on a computer and say, I'd like to see the greatest hits of Nat King Cole or the greatest hits of Frank Sinatra or the greatest hits of Andy Williams or the greatest hits of Bing Crosby or the greatest hits of Dean Martin or the greatest hits of Jose Feliciano or the greatest hits of the Ronettes. And I guarantee you, if you liked their Christmas songs, you're going to love their number one songs. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 496. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears.